The September 15th, 2020 Board of Adjustment meeting will come to order. Mr. Zinner, would you please call the roll?
Ms. Hammond?
Here.
Mr. Waters?
Here.
Mr. Norgard?
Here.
Ms. Rogers?
Here.
Ms. Lechner? Ms. Lechner is absent. You have four members. You have the minimum quorum amount. And just for a point of clarification, all items before the board this evening will require a affirmative vote of all members in attendance in order for that item to be approved. Any less than that item would be considered denied.
Applicant, if they want to go ahead.
You can. They're indicating right. That they're willing to they're okay. Plow forward. So right. let's move on to the next item.
That's great. So can I have a motion and a second for approval of the minutes? The agenda.
I'll move.
Second.
Mr. Waters, second. Okay. Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
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 Thank you. What about approval or adjustment of the minutes? Is there a motion and a second for approval?
I'll move.
Second.
Okay, so I will bring up a couple of things that we briefly discussed, but just to get them in the minutes, that there's a number of run-on words, and there's a certain name that's misspelled probably half a dozen times, just various times throughout the minutes. That's my name. And the pages aren't numbered, but that's, I don't know who that is, but. So anything else that anyone has? Okay, so let's vote to approve the minutes as amended.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, great, we'll go right ahead then. So will you please, court reporter, swear in the staff?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. So now we'll go to case number 178-2020, a request of Robert Hollis, attorney on behalf of Cal Storage LLC owner and TowerCom XB LLC lessor to permit the construction of a 140-foot tall monopole telecommunication structure and ancillary ground equipment to support cellular communication services offered by U.S. Cellular on property addressed 950 East Boone Industrial Boulevard as required by sections 29-3.3N and 29-6.4M of the Unified Development Code. So, has the property been properly advertised?
Yes, it has.
Has the property been posted with a notice of public hearing?
Yes, it has.
Have the parties of interest been notified?
Yes, they were.
Have there been any inquiries?
No, there have not.
Very good. Thank you. Would the person making application please come forward and state your name and address and be sworn in?
Robert Hollis, 1103 East Broadway, here on behalf of the applicant. Madam Chairperson, may I approach and pass?
Yes.
Well, good evening. Here on behalf of the applicant, which is the property owner as well as TowerCom, with me is Sean Hempstead, Julie Shebeck, and Chris Brinkman, all of which would be happy to answer questions, and two of which intend to speak to you briefly as part of the presentation. So in general, we're asking for a conditional use permit, which is required by the city's ordinances for a 140-foot monopole telecommunications tower. It's on a 60-by-60 leased area, a copy of which was in the application. that is on MC property, so properly zoned. Immediately adjacent property is also zoned commercial and industrial. In general, the area is underserved, and with respect to both coverage and quality, but especially quality. Get the procedural matters out of the way. I have to offer into evidence the following: a copy of the notice of application to the board, a copy of section 29-33 of the city codes, section 29-64 of the city's code, a copy of 47 USCA section 332C7, a copy of section 67.5094 of the revised Missouri statutes, a staff report, and a copy of this PowerPoint presentation. May I offer that into evidence?
Yes, thank you.
So in general, I've identified the location of the property, which is quite a ways north on 763 across from Boone Industrial Boulevard. It's on undeveloped property. Here's an aerial view showing the lack of development around it. It's immediately north of what is now Pepper's. Used to be a restaurant that everybody says was excellent. That's before I was actually eating in restaurants here. I think you probably are aware of the location. It is lot 8 of a subdivision, so that on this slide is the southernmost lot. On that lot, we've zoomed in to show the 60 by 60 location where the structure would be built, as well as an access that would also be developed off of Boone Industrial. Further zoomed in is the site plan, and it's fairly self-explanatory. There's a monopole in the middle. There's landscaping surrounding. There's a retaining wall on one side. I'll let Mr. Hempstead talk to you more about the fence that was mentioned in the staff report, but in essence, I think that issue is resolved to the extent it was an issue. There was additional supporting documentation from Sabre Industries regarding the need for the lack of need for lighting on the pole, as well as a fall letter indicating that should the structure fail, that it would fall within the boundaries of the leased area. Now, in layman's terms, the slide entitled Existing Inadequate Coverage. I'll talk to you about this, and then our engineer will explain it to you, I'm sure, much more eloquently and accurately. But as you can see, so we have four towers that are shown on this slide. The proposed tower is Columbia North _V. That's what we're here to talk about, is a proposed tower in that location. So you can see the green is the existing coverage without that tower that's being proposed. The next slide, I've got fancy arrows. So you can see there's not coverage to the northwest or to the northeast or to the southwest or directly to the west. Now, if you look at the next slide and flip back and forth, you can see that those areas that were then that are now existing dead zones are no longer dead with regard to coverage should this tower be constructed as proposed. So this is a propagation study. I understand that you had a tower application maybe at your last meeting and you weren't provided this information, which made your decision a little more difficult, but we're providing that. It's not required by law, but it makes sense, and I certainly wanted to see it. Another thing that we're not required by law to do is to consider co-locating, but we did consider co-locating because it makes sense, and we would prefer to co-locate. It's much cheaper. So the only potential co-location spot is this ATC location, so that's immediately to the south and to the east of the proposed location. And so here is what our coverage would look like in the event that we located on that tower, which, by the way, structurally, it doesn't work. It wouldn't withstand another carrier, so it's not possible. But even if it were possible, it doesn't provide adequate coverage. The green doesn't look that different from the prior green, but the engineer thinks it looks substantially different. And then, as you will see when we're talking about quality, which is the next slide, when you start to get into blues, purples, oranges, and yellows, you can see the existing quality of coverage, which now, as I understand it, and again, as the engineer will better describe to you and explain to you, quality of coverage is more related to what we do most of the time with our phones, as opposed to just talking on them, is dealing with data. So quality of coverage is of the utmost importance, and there is a substantial coverage gap with regard to quality of coverage. So here it is, the orange and yellow being bad, the darker, closer to purple being good. Next slide showing with our proposed location in place, you can see what used to be orange and yellow is now substantially darker with regard to indigo or purple or dark blue. Final propagation study slide would be if we were able to locate on the ATC location to the south and east, the quality of coverage would not be vastly improved, would be improved very little, as a matter of fact. And also, as the engineer can speak to you more clearly about, this location would actually interfere with a current location, which I believe is the Creasy Springs location to the south and to the west of the ATC location. So it's problematic for a lot of reasons. A, it can't structurally handle it. B, it doesn't provide the right quality or actual coverage, and it would provide interference. So to the boring stuff, but the things that you consider, the CUP standards. I'm not going to go through all of them unless you want to go through all of them. Staff did a very thorough job in the staff report, in essence, not to speak for staff, it looks as if staff's opinion is that we met all of the criteria. I'll go through them in summary form, but they're found in 29-33N5 and 29-64M2, Romanet 1 and Romanet 2. A summary of 29-33. So issues to the extent are related to security, lighting, advertising, co-location, height, color, finish, screening, setbacks, anchoring, and cabinets have all been addressed. In 64M2, Romanet 1, issues related to zoning, the comprehensive plan, area conformance, access, infrastructure, and adverse impacts to nearby properties have all been addressed. Finally, 29-64M2, Romanet 2, any issues that are related to existing towers, the existence or non-existence of other tall structures, existing towers' structural strength, and terms that would be possible with existing towers, limiting conditions of existing towers, minimizing the number of towers' previous failures by this applicant, and availability for use by others have also all been addressed. Now, with regard to preemption, I know there was some discussion about this previously, and I'm not sure you were provided the law. I did provide it in the application. I've got a very brief summary here referring to the federal statute that's on point, as well as the state statute that's on point. It's sort of a cascading effect. Without getting too deep into this, federal law trumps next state law to the extent it does not conflict with federal law is okay, so it can be in place. Local law, too, can be in place so long as it does not conflict with state law or federal law. So it kind of puts you in a smaller regard with respect to regulating cellular towers conditional use permit applications. I would be happy to answer any questions to the extent that you have any for me. If you do not, Mr. Hempstead will speak briefly about the fence, and then our engineer will finish the presentation. Yes, ma'am.
And so maybe, I don't know if this, I thought I saw somewhere in the application supporting documents about additional access being possible.
Oh, right. So the additional access is what's shown on the site plan. So that is already, that application has been made to the city and that will be constructed. I'm not sure where they are in that process.
Oh, that's the access that's talked about in the application, not additional to that.
Correct. Right.
Okay. That did confuse me. Okay. And the supplemental email was the study of the coverage. Why not use the tower that was just approved in August that isn't built yet?
That's even farther away than the one that was, the only one that would be and this, again, is probably an engineering question, but my understanding is the only one that would be remotely possible for co-location is the one that we just talked about at length, and it won't work for the reasons I mentioned.
That just was, I mean, after August, I just wanted to be sure that couldn't be used.
Right, right.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. And thank you very much for the detailed documentation you provided us and the laws and so on. It's much appreciated.
Welcome.
Brief question.
Yes, sir.
Which TowerCom XB are you representing tonight? Because in this packet, I see no less than three separate corporate entities. One's listed as a Delaware company, one's listed as a Florida company, and I see one with an Oklahoma address.
Well, so there may be a typo, but the Oklahoma address is the, so we have two people from Iowa, one person from here. If I count as a person, I'm from here. But then the first contact that I had with TowerCom was a gentleman who's officed out of Iowa. So it's all the same TowerCom. There could be a typo with regard to stating that it's a Delaware versus a, did you say?
There's a Florida LLC on Exhibit D of your form of memorandum of lease. And then on the option and ground lease agreement, there's a Delaware Limited Liability Corporation. So I'm just curious, which LLC are you representing here tonight?
Well, so I have no idea about those transactions. It's very common that different LLCs enter into different agreements and then end up assigning their rights under those agreements. It's okay. Very typical. I assume that's probably the case here. It also could be part of a different structure whereby they have an LLC that enters into leases, an LLC that goes through the application process, and so on. Very common.
Okay.
All the same TowerCom, to my knowledge. Yes.
You have more, Peter?
That's it.
Okay. On page 11 of your application, F says 5, let's see, has additional capacity for 4 additional co-locators for a total of 5 as required by city ordinances. Oh, maybe you're not the one I should ask that. What's required by the city ordinances?
If you're asking me, my understanding is that a total of 5 is the requirement.
So you can't put 3 on, you can't put 4 on, you have to have 5, or is 5 the maximum?
No, I don't think it's the maximum, I think it's the minimum.
Okay.
On that later. Okay.
All I got, thanks. Thank you. Will you state your name and address and be sworn in, please?
Sean Hempstead, 3311 109th Street, Urbandale, Iowa, 5022.
Honest where the testimony about.
First of all, thank you for allowing us to come in before you today. The only issue that I was going to address was in the slideshow that Robert provided on the site plan. Originally, staff had mentioned that they wanted us to possibly fence the whole compound, the whole leased area. And our reasoning for not doing that was more of a safety concern. When we actually visited the site, did our A&Es, did a survey, we realized that the elevation to the southeast was going to be 8 feet taller than our compound floor, and the fence was going to be 8 feet. And if we had the retaining wall that would have been needed to put right up against that, it would have created a safety concern where somebody could have walked right off that into the compound and fallen 8 feet. We felt that was a safety concern, so we did not want that to occur. So we revised our design to bring it across and still be able to expand to take the fifth ground space carrier that would be required. What our estimations are that they would all be typically the same size. There is a possibility that one of the carriers may be what's called a WISP, Wireless Internet Service Provider, and their ground space requirements would be so much less that we may not have to expand the compound. But if down the road we needed to, we would come to in front of this board and revise the plan and adjust.
Do you anticipate having other cohabitors or whatever it would be?
Initially, we're going to have U.S. Cellular as the anchor tenant. TowerCom is a tower owner. They make their revenue by gaining additional carriers on the tower, so they market the tower quite well. They do a very good job. They are very easy to work with. I've worked with them for off and on for 5 years and find them to be a very upstanding smaller company that's not strewn with bureaucracies that some of the larger tower companies are. But their goal is to get other carriers on there, and they will market directly to the other major carriers as well as the smaller carriers and wireless internet service providers. Also, for public safety, they'll probably talk to the county and the city and hopefully maybe try to get them or eventually as well.
So typical footprint of the ancillary equipment that's on the ground, what would you estimate that to be?
In today's world, the equipment, a lot more of it's put up on the tower, so the space needed for the ground is so different today than it was even 5-10 years ago. Many companies require, I know one company that likes to sometimes put a 12 by 30 concrete shelter at their sites. Some go down as far as a 10 by 12. U.S. Cellular will be utilizing
10, are we talking feet or
inches? Yeah, 10 feet by 12 feet,
okay.
So 120 square feet. I know U.S. Cellular's lease area is going to be 120 square feet, 10 by 12.
Okay. So that seems like it would fit easily within the 2,000 square feet that you have roughly.
And that's what we tried to represent the tip, a couple of different sizes so that it wasn't just all the same size to show that some might be a little bit bigger, some might be a little bit smaller.
How would you change the fence in the future if you need to?
What we would be proposing to do is moving it up, and it was misstated earlier, there is going to be no retaining wall today. It's going to slope down to grade at 8 feet, so it'll be ground level by the time we get to the fence. In the future, what we would do is expand it out a little bit to the southwest and be able to put a smaller retaining wall in that would not be anywhere near the height of the existing fence, so nobody could fall in. They would have to make a concerted effort to climb and get themselves in there. Security is one of the things that all wireless carriers really are concerned about. In today's world, a lot of copper theft and steel theft is done at cell sites, and making it easy for someone to just drop in, it's a little difficult, you know? And we want to prevent that as much as possible. It's a fact of life. It does happen, and the carriers will deal with it as it happens. But if we can prevent it up front, it can possibly prevent an outage of service to critical service, 911 or emergencies. The carriers just do not like to take that risk. They call it the level of three nines. They want the risk to be 0.0001.
Just trying to understand, you've kind of cut off one of the corners of the rectangular fenced area so that it won't be abutting the slope,
right?
And it won't be as easy.
Today's design, the one that's in front of you, allows for us to grade that slope down at a safe area, down to ground level right at the fence. In the future, if we ever needed to expand it, we would be pushing that angled piece back a little bit, installing a retaining wall that would come down south just a little bit, then across further out than the existing fence today, and then further to the west. We would backfill, push the dirt back, backfill that, and then move the fence back out.
So is the reason that you don't want to do it up front is that you don't know if you'll need to do it because the equipment's getting smaller?
Yeah, the need may not be there. And if we put that 4-foot retaining wall in, it's that we give them an opportunity to climb over the fence. It's by leaving it where they have 8 feet to go over a flat vinyl fence, almost impossible to climb, we would prefer that versus 4 feet. Somebody of average height of 6 foot could possibly climb over it, so the risk is greater. We're just trying to eliminate that risk as much.
Thank you.
Questions? So, would someone else like to speak? Okay. State your name.
Hello, Chris Brinkman, 4603 West Eastridge, right here in Columbia. So I'm going to start with just giving you a little history of my background. So I actually started with U.S. Cellular in 2005. I started in the business in 92. 2005, I got hired in St. Louis, and U.S. Cellular actually moved me here to be the optimization engineer back in 2005. So I've been representing them in this market in that time. I guess I'll get started on what we're here to talk about. So I'm going to start with just a little bit of history of wireless that might make these plots make just a little bit more sense. So back in the old days, we had 100-watt towers. We had 3-watt bag phones. So when we did that, it was all about the power. We didn't mind putting towers outside of town and transmitting all this power, and it wasn't that big of a deal when people dropped calls. We didn't have data to worry about. So fast forward to now, and we are dealing with 20-watt towers. That is the max that any of our towers put out. We're dealing with 0.2-watt phones. So dealing with a lot less power. So we have to have the towers in the more accurate places. We have to design the locations a whole lot more specifically. In addition, we've now added data. And with each type of cellular technology, the overhead, the control, the communication has to be more accurate, more specific. We don't, and I don't know if any of you have experience with internet or anything like that, but you don't want to have a lot of retransmissions. So you want a more accurate signal, a better quality signal. And I'll show you in this where some of the problems might lie if we don't get this tower. Okay, so right here is where we're at today. If you look at slide 24, if you've got the same presentation that I do. So, and I, does this have a?
It won't show up. What's that? It will not show up.
It will not show up. Okay, so I'm gonna try my best to show you from here. Basically, the areas of concern, one of them is going to be the Van der Veen Crossing neighborhood that right now, our service, we don't have a strong signal in that neighborhood where you might drive through with a car and you'll be able to place a call, you'll be able to surf the internet, no problem. You go into some of the homes and you're gonna have a problem using the internet. You'll still be able today, you'll still be able to place a voice call. But if you can't get to the internet, in the future, we're going to have a service called Voice over LTE. So if you remember back, we used to have Vonage that was voice over IP. Well, all the carriers are now going to voice over LTE, which is basically the same thing, but a whole lot higher quality than Vonage used to be. Another area of concern is going to be in this northeast area. So if you're familiar with the Boone County Jail and the 911 Center, they have actually, years ago, I helped them put in a booster so they could actually use their phones inside the jail. They had a training room that you couldn't get a signal with any carrier in that training room. We also are one of those carriers. And then, of course, it's largely undeveloped, but there are homes that are going in kind of to the northwest. That is another area of concern for us. If you go to the next slide, slide 25, you can see where the area that the jail is has good coverage with this proposed site. The area of Vanderveen Crossing also has improved coverage. And then, like I said, that undeveloped area, that undeveloped area also has improved coverage. Now I'm going to go to, and I won't spend a lot of time on this, but this is that American Tower Company tower that was an option that we considered, but it turns out not to be an option for so many reasons. If you look at it, it does not cover that area that is right now, you know, they're working on developing to the northwest. It doesn't help the jail area quite as well. So where that's going to be a difference, again, you know, if you talk about driving out there with your car, you'll be able to use your phone with no problem. But you walk into a building, all of a sudden it won't work. I would say a prime example of that scenario is if anybody spends a lot of time going into Home Depot. You walk into Home Depot, and most carriers, you walk into there, you have to get onto their Wi-Fi, because by the time you get back to paint, your phone's not working. And that's great signal outside for every carrier, but the inside service just is not the same because the building attenuates that service. Now, we're talking about data here. So data, signal coverage, and quality. Quality is the most important. One of the problems with having poor quality signal, and where we're talking about here, we've got the Creasy Spring site that was mentioned before. We also have what we call the Columbia Cell site, which is our MITSO that's over off Vandiver. That's not too entirely far from this proposed site. But what happens is you've got these towers that are serving that area at not a great signal level, so the quality is not great. You need to have one signal that's stronger than the rest to have good quality. So, you know, you don't always need a strong signal, but you need to have one server that's stronger than the others to have that quality. And one of the things that happens if you don't have good quality, if you have a weaker signal, is let's say you get into that Vanderveen Crossing area and you see that signal for the Columbia site, and you're over there, you're surfing the internet on there. Well, all of a sudden then your phone sees the signal for Creasy Springs. And where CDMA, our voice service, that combines those signals with data services, it actually pauses that signal. So you might have great signal on your phone. In this case, we don't. But you might have great signal on your phone and still have really slow throughput. So it actually pauses the service over there, sends all the packets over to the other tower. That slows down your signal. And then if you're in an area like Vanderveen Crossing is today, you're going back and forth between those two. So those people are saying, well, I got two bars, and I've got really, really slow internet. Then you go inside, and your bars go down, your signal strength goes down, and that signal quality gets worse. So that explains today where we are, where we exist. And of course, we have the same problem around in the same areas around the jail and around that area to the northwest. This is with our new tower. So with this, you can see where the yellow goes away, the yellow and orange. We've got blue where Vanderveen Crossing is. You actually have really good, clean signal. So now, even if you're in an area where the signal's not the strongest, inside the house, inside the basement, you're still going to get really good speeds because you're not constantly pausing that service. The jail, of course, is the same way. And that jail is only about a mile from where this tower is. So that also, as I said before, serves the 911 center and the police training center. And then, of course, it does improve up in that undeveloped area, kind of behind where 63 Diner is in that area. Now we get to this one. So the circles and the squares, you can see where areas that we were trying to improve didn't get improved. You still see the same kind of pattern, but it doesn't really mesh with where a lot of the neighborhoods are, where a lot of the houses are. And it doesn't get too well to the northwest, and it also doesn't really serve the jail that well.
That's the pattern now, correct?
That is the pattern if we use that ATC.
Okay.
The pattern now would be this one. And like I said, I mean, you could see where a lot of the residential areas, we might have okay signal, again, being served by towers that were from back when we had 3-watt bag phones and 100-watt towers. But it's not serving today our data services. And another thing, you know, when we go to the VoLTE, voice over LTE, we need data services to work. Because one of the first things that happens when you get poor quality is your voice service goes away. So that will impact 911 calls, which, I mean, nothing else I do matters as much as protecting 911 traffic. What I had.
May I ask, these color maps, are the colors calibrated to some specific signal level?
They are. They are color. They are calibrated to the U.S. cellular standards.
Okay.
So,
for instance, going from one map to another doesn't change the meaning of indigo, for instance.
That is correct.
Okay.
Correct. And they do that with, you know, not just for this project, but that is no matter what we do. That way, if I'm talking to an RF engineer, you know, and I send him what I see in my drive test, the colors match up to what is in this map. So they're able to see, because a lot of the work that I do is behind the wheel collecting drive data to make sure that these maps are accurate.
And I guess a follow-up question regarding the jail is, you mentioned before that you have installed boosters there.
Mm-hmm.
Are the quality of service and coverage maps with your proposed tower location at the Boone County Jail, are those minus the booster, or is the booster still a component there?
The booster is a component there, but that's not captured on this map. And that only serves inside.
Right. Oh.
That doesn't help anything
in the
outside.
Walls.
In fact, one of the things I'll end up doing, should this be approved once it turns up, is we'll have to repoint it. Not a problem.
Would anyone else like to speak to this application? Is there anyone who would speak who wants to speak in opposition to the application?
So, you have heard testimony from the applicant's agent, from two of the applicants here this evening. I did not channel with Mr. Hollis today as it relates to graphics that were chosen as a part of our presentation. But the content that you have had presented to you this evening, and I think Mr. Hollis has summed it up quite correctly, we find that the tower's proposed location, the documentation that has been supplied, the necessity for the tower and its improvements through the propagation maps that were just presented to you, all compelling as it relates to staff's support of this particular application. As Mr. Hollis indicated, staff's recommendation included two conditions. One, that the tower, if approved, be built in substantial compliance to the site plans prepared by Fullerton Engineering Design that were part of the packet this evening. And the second condition that dealt with the fencing, actually, as I was preparing for today's presentation, my question was answered. I did not identify that the expansion of where the diagonal of the fenced area would be corrected at a future date. So part of what we overlooked as we were reviewing the materials was, in fact, that the fence area, the leased area, would be fully enclosed as the demands were generated. And the applicant has adequately addressed our concern with that this evening with their comments as it relates to equipment cabinetry sizing and actual equipment enclosures. So that secondary condition is not necessary at this point based upon, one, our observation on the actual site plan, and B, the conclusions and the offering of documentation, or at least support this evening in the presentation. We are not going to go through our staff report unless you all ask for us to go through it. Our recommendation is to approve the telecommunication tower as it has been submitted, finding that it is compliant with both sections of the Unified Development Code, and we only recommend that a single condition be added if you should choose to approve, and that is that the design of the site be substantially compliant with the Fullerton engineering design drawings. If you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them.
Questions for staff? When did Missouri adopt section 67.5094 of the RSMO? Same year as the federal?
You know, no, the Federal Communications Act was adopted in 1986, and has been 96, and has been amended over time. The state's Deployment Act was adopted, if I'm not incorrect, 2017, maybe late 2016, just before we adopted the Unified Development Code. So the State Deployment Act, as well as the Federal Communications Act, have what's referred to as a shot clock review criteria process, in which applications received must be actually reviewed and acted upon within a timely manner. As we were developing the provisions related to what is inside the Unified Development Code, our use specific standards, and the conditional use requirements, it was decided at that point with our legal staff that we were not going to pursue to try to incorporate all of the statutory requirements at the state level. And pursuant to the conversation we had this evening during our work session, I think the documentation of those statutory requirements that may exist outside of our own code can be incorporated in future applications. But what has been submitted this evening, as I have stated within the actual staff report itself, should be viewed as being compliant with the statutory limitations on municipalities and what the applicant is providing or is required to provide. And Mr. Hollis did contact me after our last Board of Adjustment meeting asking me, well, what should I be asking to submit? And I strongly recommended the list of information that you have received, and you can see my powers of persuasion were quite adequate. It has helped us greatly also in being able to evaluate and come to the findings that we have come to. The height of this tower is 144 total feet, and as we did with our last application, that additional 4 feet has to deal with the lightning rod, which is not actually, it, while it is considered technically part of the structure, it is not actually the actual structure. The structure of the tower is 140 feet. The tower application materials, as well as the staff report, references the ability for an expansion vertically of the tower to 180 feet, if I recall correctly. That is an entirely separate action. Your board order, should you decide to approve this application this evening, would be for a maximum of 140 foot with a 4 foot lightning rod, so 144 total. Any additional height would have to be granted pursuant to the board's another board action, and then potentially any additional FAA requirements that may need to be met as it relates to lighting or other aviation-related matters. The fall zone letter that you received that Mr. Hollis referenced is not an uncommon letter that we receive as it relates to the structural integrity in the collapse zone, or fall zone as it's referred to in the letter. It is an addition actually to our current code, which previously didn't exist. And that basically, what that certification is indicating is that this tower, should it structurally fail due to its construction, is actually not going to topple. There's a caisson at the bottom that's anchored in concrete 10 to 15 feet below grade. The wind loads applied to the tower through the engineering analysis would actually have the tower pole bend, but bend at a point where it wouldn't be any greater than 55 feet from the base of the tower itself. So where this particular leased area is situated on this property, it will fully comply with all of the fall zone standards that the code has to offer within it without impairing or potentially creating a safety issue for any adjoining property itself. So, you know, with those issues at hand and our concerns as it relates to the fencing area addressed, again, we're supportive of the tower itself. And one question, I believe, Ms. Hammond, that you had raised in regards to the total number of carriers that must be on a tower. The new code specifically dictates the number of spaces that must be provided for carriers, which is different from what our old regulations previously had in it. Our old regs prior to 2017 indicated every tower constructed in the city needed to have no less than 3 available spaces. Based upon our consultants' work nationally, as well as other national communication ordinances, generally the carrier load on a particular tower is based upon its height. So there are differing levels of the number of carriers. We still have no less than 3, and that's generally for a tower, I believe, 90 feet or less in height, which are very rare nowadays unless we're in a highly populated area where we've got towers quite frequently, going all the way up to, I believe, the one we had last month, which was a total of 6 at 151 feet and above. So this particular tower falls into, I believe, the 4th category, and I believe it's 121 feet to 150, has a maximum or a minimum capable load of 5 total carriers. U.S. Cellular will take the top position on this pole as the principal carrier, and then there are 4 additional co-location points below that. And as was discussed this evening, those are not always reserved just for cellular service. The landscape of cellular service within the country is changing quite rapidly through consolidations. Really, there are probably only 4 primary carriers right now that offer cellular service nationally, and the rest of the space that often exists on towers is either used for wireless internet providers or some type of other communication services that maybe have far less load on a tower from the structural capacity. But this tower is being designed at the 140 feet to support the structural load that would be exerted with 5 standard carriers. So the structural strength of this tower is quite significant and probably will more than adequately support the telecommunication needs or communication needs generally for this area that currently don't exist. I would tell you, in evaluating the propagation maps myself and looking at where we have development occurring and still filling in, this positions not only U.S. Cellular but any other carrier needing to reach this particular area with penetration interior to buildings as well as other coverage exceptional to allow for the deployment to new service users in the future as well as possibly for the city. So we see this as definitely consistent with what the objectives of communication needs are for the community as a whole. And don't find the location out of character. I mean, the tower height obviously will be significantly greater than what the maximum height is, but as we discussed last month, the board is fully capable of approving the tower height as a part of its board order in order to support the services that are being proposed. And so what we saw in the propagation maps is based on 140-foot placement of the antenna array. And that is what's necessary to gain the coverage and the quality enhancements that the maps depicted. So again, in staff's opinion, the 140 feet is reasonable to achieve those ends.
Sort of a silly question. I'm sure it's probably defined in the definition somewhere, but how exactly is the height measured? Is it from the base of the antenna or is it from some
It would be from grade elevation of the tower all the way to basically the top of the pole. Now, if you're talking about average vertical elevation, which is what's often, I think it's described as AVL mm-hmm. or AGL. I think it's AGL, average ground level. That's based upon what sea level is. So the surveyor in one of the documents that you had supplied with you in the application actually has a certification of what the grade or the elevation is of the site.
And you're driving at my question, which is, does our decision depend on the uncertainty in the vertical measurement that the surveyor made?
No. I think what I would strongly suggest to you that your approval is for a tower of a specific height. However that height is determined, if grade's got to be raised or lowered, you're going to approve a tower of a maximum of 144 feet with the 4-foot lightning rod.
Okay.
Mr. Hollis, would you like to make any comments?
All right. I actually have a question for legal before we move on.
Well, legal's going to come up when I close the public hearing. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to be clear that the fact that we have in our packets, which represent an official record, we have two separate corporate entities for TowerCom XB. I just want to make sure that that's not going to be a problem for our decision rendering capacity.
What might be useful is just to have Mr. Hollis say on the record which one is the applicant in this situation, which state they are incorporated in, and then you make a decision that is the entity that is actually receiving it.
Okay. Thank you.
And if I may just ask a question of our law department, Cal Storage LLC is actually the property owner. We only include the leaseor in this, so the leaseor and the lease arrangement, I would ask, does that really matter? The property owner is a Missouri LLC.
Oh, so, all right.
Okay.
Well, I guess the question in my mind then is, who is the actual applicant for this?
Cal Storage LLC. I added TowerCom XB LLC as the leaseor.
So the application says TowerCom XB is requesting a conditional use permit on the application for conditional use permit.
I'll let Mr. Hollis respond to what Mr. McManus had suggested.
May I?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Okay, so that was going to be my answer initially, is that it's the property owner would suffice as the applicant. What you have is TowerCom, the multiple entities, also serving as applicant. If you need a specific TowerCom, then it can be the Delaware. So it's TowerCom, I'll say it out loud. TowerCom X-B LLC, a Delaware limited liability company. But I don't think it matters. That suffice?
Sufficient for me.
Thank you. All right. So we're ready to close the public hearing. So, Mr. McManus, do you have comments for us? Or?
I would like to have the board accept into evidence both the documents that were provided by the applicant and the staff report. Beyond that, I have no specific comments on this.
Thank you. We'll accept those. Thank you. All right. Board, commissioners, discussion?
Fair to say. Seems like
I just want to say, boy, before 2017, municipalities must have gone wild with cell towers, and that's why the state passed that law. Oh, I was trying to be funny.
Wild West.
Yeah, it must have been. Well, does someone want to make a motion? I'll move.
Okay.
That we approve the application to permit the construction of a 140-foot-tall monopole telecommunications structure and ancillary ground equipment to support cellular communication services offered by U.S. Cellular on property addressed as 950 East Boone Industrial Boulevard. I guess a 140 plus 4 feet for a electric rod or a lightning rod. And the tower is to be constructed substantially in compliance with the development plans prepared by Fullerton Engineering Design. Period. Okay. Okay. Is there a second? Mr. Zinner, does that cover the motion, cover it to your satisfaction?
Yes, it did, ma'am.
All right. I can't ask for the vote. Do you want to call the roll?
So there has been a motion and a second made in relationship to case 178-2020 to approve the request to permit a 144-foot maximum tall tower, monopole telecommunication tower, and that is 140 feet of pole with a 4-foot lightning rod, and ancillary ground equipment to support cellular communication services offered by U.S. Cellular on property addressed as 905 East Boone Industrial Boulevard, subject to the construction of said telecommunication tower and ancillary ground equipment being substantially compliant with the design plan submitted by Fullerton Engineering Design and attached to the staff report and supplemental documentation entered in as evidence. Ms. Hammond?
Yes.
Mr. Waters?
Yes.
Ms. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Norgaard?
Yes.
Motion receives 4 votes of the board and is deemed approved.
Thank you.
That's all
very
we
much.
Have.
Thank you, Mr. Hollis, and applicants.
Congratulations.
Right. Do we want any discussion, board? Anything anyone wants to bring up again? More? All right. Is there a motion to adjourn?
I'll move.
Second.
Good. Adjourn. Thank you.